making money is kind of secondary for me. If I'm not making an impact and helping people, it becomes very unfulfilling. And doing this, all these trainings and all this stuff. And I knew that 90% of the salespeople that I was talking to would not do the things that they were wanting to do. And we were talking about simple stuff like response times, how to handle a lead, how to qualify a lead, how to follow up, how to go to your prospect database and actually generate your own leads. Like simple stuff, but make such a huge impact in a business's bottom line.
Hello, I'm Steve Klass with the business breakthrough you've been waiting for. We're here taking service businesses to $1 million and beyond. Let's see what kind of impact the next 30 minutes will have on your life and your business. Hello, my people. This is Steve Klass here with Service Business Success with me, Steve Klass. This is a really impactful episode. I really enjoyed this conversation with Matt Boyle. I consider it a masterclass in sales, particularly for B2B. He has really gone to the next level when it comes to LinkedIn messaging and how to set up sales appointments through there. In addition to that, we get into some really deep stuff. His mission statement, really a portion of his proceeds and a lot of his employees, is to help sex trafficking workers, particularly women in Southeast Asia. So Thailand, Philippines, Vietnam. He went there on a trip and was really, really moved to the point where he quit his very successful business to start a new company focused on helping these women of sex trafficking and employing a lot of them on his new company. So really, really inspiring stuff. He spends absolutely zero money on ads, which is astounding. His company is generating close to $1 million in revenue, and he's made other businesses anywhere from $40 to $50 million in just the past 4 years. So his systems really do work. It's not rocket science either, guys. And we really get in the nitty and gritty on this conversation, where we'll even do some role playing further along, where we kind of go into, okay, you have an X company. This is your target client base. How do you effectively have the messaging out to get sales appointments? So stick around. This is excellent. His company is How to Scale. So check him out. And he'll give a quick shout out at the end. So if you wanted to learn more, connect with his team, it's available as well. As always, my only ask here is to please find me on Apple or Spotify or YouTube. Give me a quick 5-star rating. Shoot a little comment. I want this message to reach as many people as humanly possible. So you'll be doing myself a service and other entrepreneurs. So with that being said, let's get into the show. I am joined by the legendary salesman, Matt Boyle. And to say he's a salesman is probably a cheap way to put it, because that means that I think the first image that people have to mind is like a used car salesman. He is anything but that. He is a master of entrepreneurship. He is a business owner. He is a sales trainer. His company is, Matt, without further ado, please introduce your company name here so people can find you.
Yep. How to Scale Your Sales, Steve.
How to Scale Your Sales. It's as easy as that, folks. We're going to do a deep dive into his business mindset and kind of go over a little bit of his hardships. But I don't want to hog the microphone here. I really want to thank Matt for coming on the show with me, because it's my honor. I've gotten to know him as a client, where he's helped me grow my sales system so I can speak firsthand to his process here. So Matt, I really appreciate it, man.
Man, Steve, thanks for having us. And I've got to say, and I don't think you actually know this about me, I actually cut my teeth selling used cars. So that's actually where I started my sales journey quite a few years ago now. But I'm a reformed car dealer, that's for sure.
I'm sure when you were selling cars, though, you weren't the stereotypical sign here and to hell with the outcome kind of person. So, or maybe you were. Maybe you were reformed.
Yeah. I was fortunate, actually. The yard where I spent a lot of my time working on, my boss there was someone that I learned so much from, about systems and accountabilities and all of that kind of stuff. He was really miles ahead of his time with the systems, that it was just to the point that you could walk in and he had 18 yards and 18 dealerships across Southeast Queensland. You could actually walk into any one of those 18 and yards, and this is back in the early 2000s, and within 15 minutes, you could go from knowing nothing to being able to run that department at 100% efficiency, because everything was standardized and systemized. And you know, it was to the point, and I'm still saying it today, like every time someone greeted, come into the yard, was, you know, Hello, my name's Matt. Yours is? Hi, Steve. Is today a day for looking or is today a day for buying? And that was the greeting that you used to have to say for every single one. And then when they would always say, oh, today's looking, great, I'm here to help. Tell me, what are you looking for? And it was a very structured process. So yeah, I learned so much foundational skills about the power of systems in a selling mindset while cutting my teeth there.
That's fantastic, man. So I can't wait for us to get into the specific tactics of your sales process, how you set up these systems. Walk me through, though, besides being working at this car dealership, I know that you've owned other successful and unsuccessful businesses in the past. So let's kind of dig into it a little bit here. What led you to kind of leaving that sales role to starting your own business? What was the driving, motivating factor there?
So there's a couple of evolutions. So when I was back selling cars, I was one of the first guys to realize that the internet was changing how people were buying cars. So I started to see all of these, you know, leads started to come in by email and I could see that we had a conversion rate of 1 in 3 when someone walked in, but on internet was 1 in 20. And so I kind of went about and sort of just locked myself in an office and figured out how to start selling cars over the internet. And that was kind of the butterfly effect. That was that kind of little moment that there set everything else in motion. And a few years later, I'd realized that I'd taken that as far as I could, you know, at the dealership there. So I actually turned that into the first version of my business, which was actually sales trading. And I took all of the skills that I'd learned and developed over the last couple of years and actually took that to other dealerships, you know, around Australia. And I very quickly grew that into 4 offices around Australia, which, you know, for us is national. So I had that all the way around. We had about 3,000 salespeople that we were training and had a very profitable business.
Wow.
It also happened to be very unfulfilling though.
So you just, even though you guys were crushing it on the sales side, you just felt like you were kind of going through the motions at the time?
Yeah, look, it was, you know, I'm driven by impact, you know, so making money is kind of secondary for me. If I'm not making an impact and helping people, it becomes very unfulfilling. And, you know, so I'm doing this all these trainings and all this stuff, and I knew that 90% of the salespeople that I was talking to would not do the things that they were wanting to do. And we were talking about simple stuff like response times, how to handle a lead, how to qualify a lead, how to follow up, how to go to your prospect database and actually generate your own leads. Like simple stuff, but make such a huge impact in a business's bottom line. And no one was doing it. And big dealerships were paying $20,000 to $30,000 a day for these training workshops for both my team and I and their staff and catering and all that kind of stuff. And you just knew that within 30 days of you walking out of there, everything that they'd learned would be forgotten about. It was kind of that horribly fulfilling sort of thing of just going, why am I wasting my time? You know, and that's what kind of led us to the story that we've spoken about previously, where through some circumstances, I've got to go spend 3 weeks in Thailand rescuing women out of brothels and kids out of brothels and looking at the depravity that is sexual slavery and human trafficking. And that's kind of when the light just shone on for me of going, I now know what I need to do. I need to help.
And I know people who are listening, the conversation probably just did a quick 180 on everyone from sales training to sex trafficking, right? So did you go to Thailand with the intent to like find out more about this CD underground, or was it more of a leisure vacation? And then you were exposed to kind of like the dark underbelly and say, whoa, what's going on here?
No, I was 100% going over there with the purpose. I met a gentleman and this is what he did. And the more we got to sort of share our stories and what he was telling us about some of the things that were happening over in Thailand with kids. And I've got 6 kids. I had, you know, my kids were sort of all young and he was telling me about, you know, stories of boys 4 or 5 and girls 12 and 13. And the more he came and kept sharing, I just kind of grabbed him one day. I said, you need to take me. I need to see this myself. And so we went over with it, the intent of kind of look at this. So we literally slept in this seedy motel. We were, you know, and I had to actually pretend to be interested in buying underage kids to buy their freedom. And, you know, through that, we got chased by the Russian mafia. I got a tattoo that I didn't plan. Like, it was scary, scary stuff. And I realized, as I was kind of in the Singapore airport halfway home, I realized kind of two things. Firstly, that's not me. I don't want to go do the rescuing because I'm not cut out that way. I'm sitting in the airport just blubbering like a baby over everything that I'd seen. And Dad had said, I can't do that. I can't separate what I'd seen from my kids and my family. So I knew that I didn't, that wasn't me, but also knew that I had to make a, had to make a difference. And, you know, so I've got this sales training company and obviously I'm training all these salespeople to not do these things, but I'm, you know, my head is, I'm kind of in the airport. I've got businesses are spending $30,000 on training for their teams not to do the work. And as I'm kind of remembering a lot of the incidences, you know, over there, every situation, everyone that got caught up in this world in Thailand did so because of, they needed money. And so the two bridges connected have gone, well, if instead of businesses paying me to train their team for them not to do the work, if I could figure out how to actually automate and outsource and get all this work done for them in a way that is going to deliver them results, they'll just pay me the same amount of money just to do it for them. Businesses would make more money and I could go and create jobs. So that was how those two worlds kind of collided into that, that moment of going, if I can just get really good at sales systems and systemize all this process, businesses wouldn't need their team to do it then. They'd just get us to do it. Get us to do it for
them. I can't emphasize enough how powerful that statement is that you mean, that that you just said about finding your purpose. And in this case, it's something, I can't think of anything honestly more noble than helping people be uplifted from sex trafficking. But to a lot of people who are just doing, going through the motions of sales, let's just say, just trying to hit like that gold dollar amount, you will burn out. You will lose something. You know, you could be sacrificing your soul. I mean, if you're in sales just to make money, you probably shouldn't be in sales. You really have to believe in what you're selling. And it doesn't have to be anything glamorous, as long as the end result of what you're doing is, could even be on the back end, such as yours is.
Yeah, and it's that thing of, you know, yes, it's a noble cause. Yes, it's great. And yes, it drives me and it's pushed me through so many barriers and over so many obstacles. And it's cost me everything in the process too. But it's that thing of going, for me, being able to sleep at night knowing I'm making an impact, that's what drives it. So, you know, that's been the most fun out of all of this, is actually just going, I actually, and it took some iterations, was able to build a model that the more successful I became, the more people I helped, and the more people I helped, the more successful I became. And it's this one feed to the other. And as you said, it doesn't matter how big the mission is or what it is. When you kind of have that at the core of going, I just want to help people, and help customers, help the people that you're serving, the people in your community, helping your family and helping yourself. When you kind of put that first, profit second, it makes it so much easier to overcome the obstacles that are going to get put in front of you. You know, when if you're doing it just for the money, you're just chasing the next shiny object and you bounce from one thing to another, to another, to another, and you never really get the depth that you need, you know, and the mastery and the, and that level of perseverance that you need to actually break through that next level.
It's very true, man. So just for time frame, when did you end up launching this business?
That was 2015.
And smashing success, no hiccups at all, easy peasy, right?
Absolutely. Look, I'm a visionary and I'm also a sales guy. So my blind spot is financial control. So I got back, really punched up in emotion. I'm going to change my whole business in a moment. So I effectively went over in about 90 days, fired all of my clients, closed all my offices down, and then said, right, I'm going to go start this new business.
So you fired all your clients, a company that was probably making you a sizable amount, like in your pocket.
Yeah, and we're turning over close to $1.5 million.
It's amazing.
I was probably making 20-25% out of that.
When I say amazing, it's amazing that you were able to walk away from that. That's what I mean. So it's...
Yeah, look, that I was driven by impact to the beginning to grow it, but when I just got back, I was so motivated to do something, I just kind of went, oh, I've got to go do it. And I threw myself full on without really having a plan, having the vision, having the, you know, the goal, not realizing how long it was going to take, how hard the project was, how much money it was going to take, and all of these other complexities that you didn't kind of envisage, which, to be honest, if I had kind of stopped to think about it, I probably would have talked myself out of it. But I just went in and did it and kind of just jumped in the deep end and figured it out. And look, the reality is I did that just by spending. So we kind of kept spending and living as if we were making 400 grand a year when we weren't. And very, very quickly ran out of money, got in trouble, ended up, you know, having to sell cars, ended up having the bank repossess our house and kind of lost everything.
And at this time, you have a young family, not just one kid. You have multiple children at this time that are relying on you.
Yeah, yeah. So we had six kids, and at that time, my oldest was about 13, and my youngest was about 4. So, you know, we're able to keep the family together, which in hindsight is probably the only important thing out of that, but lost everything. And it was at that kind of moment, you know, where you really had a decision to make. And I wanted to quit. I wanted to give up. And, you know, I was literally sitting at this lookout praying and just going, give me the guidance. And the words that kind of came through to me from there was just keep going. Because if you quit now, the pain doesn't go away. But if you keep going, the pain will go away and it will work out. And I still didn't believe it. So I actually went and did the numbers of going, well, if I go back and get a job, then go back to selling cars or managing a car yard, what is that going to look like financially? And the reality was I couldn't afford to go back and get a job because we'd never recover. I'd have to take my kids out of school and all of these things that just weren't a possibility. So that was the kind of going, well, you've got to figure this shit out. And that's kind of what we did. I sat down and went, well, I've got no choice. How do I move forward? And the first decision was, well, there's 24 hours in a day. If you get up at 3 o'clock in the morning, you can sell from 3 o'clock till 10 o'clock in the United States. And then you can sell from 10 o'clock to 4 o'clock in Australia. And then you can go from 4 o'clock to 7 o'clock into the United Kingdom and effectively get 3 work days in one day. That's how we ended up launching in America. And all that kind of stuff. But that was kind of the thing. I had no resources. I had no money. I had no time. You know, the only thing I had was my ability to be able to sell. So I figured out how to go, you know, how to generate leads quickly. And I didn't have any money. So I was like, how do I use LinkedIn to go do it? How do I use email? How do I use all these kind of no-cost strategies? And I did it. I started sending messages on LinkedIn, starting scraping details and sending emails to people and just started using that to book appointments and then close them and failed miserably. Like our client churn in the beginning was about 70% a month, you know, because our product wasn't up to scratch. The team that was put in place and the team that was building systems weren't there. And so we'll, you know, literally kind of feeding a column, of, you know, trying to build a business and just keep feeding stuff in and everything's falling through on the back end. From that, and you're developing this product as you're selling it, as you're funding it out of cash flow from there. And that was our life for about 2 years.
And for the listeners here, just because I've already kind of taken a peek behind the curtain, Matt employs people from Southeast Asia to help them escape poverty in their conditions. Those are the people that help him out, that help him out on the back end. And of course, his training evolved by his hand personally. Just so everyone's aware that this isn't just something where you're still focused on the mission statement throughout all this, I should add.
Yeah. Yeah, look, creating jobs and empowering women, you know, it's everything. And the kind of the bringing back into the kind of why with that was if you could take, you know, if you could donate money, that's great. You know, but it doesn't really create sustainability. you can't teach entrepreneurism because there's no money in these communities anyway. So if you actually could build an employment center and go create jobs, you can impact the people that you're employing, but you can also impact the greater community because you've taken foreign money, putting it into the communities in a sustainable way. You're giving people purpose, you're giving people, you know, sustenance, and then they're spending that money through the community. So as we were kind of going through, what I was trying to figure out is how can I get the systems to the point where you could take someone that knows nothing about a product but can generate quality leads and help manage that sales process. And that was a heck of a lot harder than what I naively thought when I started. How can you develop those systems? So it was like me setting things up, going and trying to train someone how to do it.
I call this the presenter's dilemma, where you have all the knowledge in your head and you know exactly how a sales process should go. And when someone doesn't fulfill, it's like, this is easy, guys. Just step 1, 2, 3, 4. And this is how you get to the other side here. But what's easy for you is a mountain to climb for someone else. If you're excellent in football and you're trying to explain to me, Steve, like your stance isn't quite proper. You need to really spring from the legs. You could try to train me for a month and I'll get marginally better, but I'm still going to suck. There's just the talent isn't there in some cases. So walk us through a little bit. What does that training process look like?
So what we ended up having to do is kind of work on a couple of levels. The first level that we ended up kind of thinking through was having to get really clear and work on mapping out that buyer's journey. So what is the decisions that a prospect is going to make? To go take, you know, before someone can go from a total stranger, you know, into a supplier for it. So what does that journey from the buyer look like? What are the decisions they need to make from there? Because that then influences the process. And the process is the second kind of lane that you could operate of going, what is the steps that you can take them through to guide them through that journey from that? How can you quality control all of those steps? How can you systemize it in a way that it is step one, step two, step three, step four, step five, you know, step six. And then the third element is, right, what is the story we're going to use to sell that? You know, so what is the messaging and the order you've got to do to sort of put that together? And then the final lane is, how can you performance manage so you know how things are going? You know whether things are on track or off track. And it was really kind of breaking it down into that granular detail. So when it comes into the planning phase, before you launch it, it's going, right, what does our customer look like? You know, what is the product we're selling, or what are all the decisions they need to make, and get really clear on that. Then we kind of look at the steps and go, well, we're going to use LinkedIn, we're going to use email, we're going to use video, we're going to use a survey. What are we going to use in those steps? And then how can we match those steps with the right messaging at the right time so we can actually seamlessly take them on that journey.
So what I'm hearing is that you're creating a really great marketing side, so people who are interested actually know what widget or product you're selling or service, but also making sure that there's story-based selling and messaging that corresponds to that, and then identifying a clear client avatar. I mean, I can't emphasize that enough, where it's like, who exactly is your client base that you can target?
Yeah. To make something scalable, you've got to bring it down into kind of having one clear prospect that has one big problem. You can take them on one simple, repeatable process and make them one big, big promise. And when you kind of get your narrative like that and your story like that, that you can guide them through that, it allows you to get the cut through that you need. It allows you to kind of streamline a lot of the processes where you can create assets once. So you can create a series of videos once and then build a process to have someone deliver that messaging on your behalf. It allows you to create one good email campaign and have someone else deliver it on your behalf. It allows you to have one good LinkedIn. So when you kind of can match the buying journey with your story, between those two things, there becomes the repeatable process. And then when you kind of look at that purely from the mechanical step one, step two, step three, step four, you can then outline those steps, create a training video of how to do it, be able to measure, be able to manage that. But most importantly, then you're actually taking the skill and the ability for that agent needs to be able to sell your product out of the equation. The agent then just purely manages the process and they're just following step one, step two, step three, step four. And because we've created that journey and we've matched our story with the buyer's journey and we're delivering the messages in the right way, that's what's doing the work for us. And then when you wrap that in the right performance management, where instead of just trying to manage sales from the rearview mirror, look at the end of the month and go, oh, darn, we missed our target. You can actually start looking at the things that are happening in real time, because any sales campaign really needs to have four goals. First goal is you need to be able to connect with the right people. When you have the right systems in place, you can measure the effectiveness of that really easily. You can see, are we connecting with people that match our avatar, yes or no? And again, you don't need to know about the product. You just need to have it clear about what the avatar is and be able to kind of reference that versus the people you're connecting with. So that's the first goal. The second objective then is you need to start conversations with them. Are they responding to your initial messages? Are they filling in forms? Are they turning into kind of what I would call an unqualified lead? And again, you can measure the effectiveness of that and benchmark it. So every 100 prospects, how many leads is that turning into? So you don't need to wait to the end of the month. You can be doing that in real time. The third objective then is, can you turn those conversations into qualified appointments? And again, you can be measuring that on a daily basis, on a weekly basis. So again, you don't get to the end of the month.
Whatever CRM you happen to be using, it could be, take your pick, as long as you're properly tracking that information.
And then the fourth thing is, are we converting the appointments into sales? So when you kind of look at it, and that's a fairly high level, when you kind of peel back a couple of layers, there could be 10 or 15 or 20 different variables that go into sort of those four objectives. You can very easily kind of have a tracking of, you know exactly where you are compared to where you need to be to hit your goals. And if you're off course, which, let's be honest, you're off course 90% of the time. But if you're off course, at least you know where you're off course, so you can be asking the right questions on how to fix it. So 2-3 years worth of testing and failing forward with clients or with our own stuff, and we created that framework that, again, it takes the skill out of sales and puts the skill into the strategy and into the setup, which means you and I can spend a couple of hours and map out the strategy, and then we can build all the assets, and then we can go train people on how to follow the process, that, and they don't need to know about the product. They just need to know how to follow the process. And then you and I can manage the process. And if things aren't working, we can make course corrections. And what that gives us is the ability to find leverage, the ability to kind of build the sales function as a process that relies on systems rather than people, which means you get it right, you can double your activity and double your results, triple your activity and triple your results. And yet, you know, rather than hiring a salesperson, that salesperson crushes it, and then you hire a second salesperson that completely bombs.
It's almost like it's like the e-myth applied directly to a sales process, where there's SOPs that kind of lead people on a journey here.
100%. One of the biggest influences I had in creating this was Edward Stemming, was the father of process innovation. He was actually an American that in post-World War II that got laughed out of the United States, went over to Japan, and is, you know, credited as being one of the biggest impacts of, you know, Japan's economic revolution. Went so much so they've actually got the Deming's Award.
I think he's actually quoted by, I'm sure you're familiar with the 80-20 principle.
Yep.
Richard Koch, who I'm actually set to meet in Portugal in a month, which is fascinating. The author of that book quoted that gentleman in his book as his guy, like, look how this guy went. He was laughed out of the United States, went to Japan, came back to the United States once. They're like, what are you doing in Japan? Come back. Sorry we ignored you.
Yeah, like companies like Toyota and Sony all credit Deming's with their like Kaizen type of approach, that continuous and never ending improvement. He was in manufacturing, was focused on quality as the biggest driving metric. So he was focused on, you know, warranty repairs and returns as the kind of biggest driver of growth, rather than efficiency and all that kind of stuff, which was total counterintuitive at the time because everyone was, oh, like volume and, you know, cost per unit and all that kind of stuff. And he was like, no, people will pay more for quality. And, you know, some of the quotes I said, I could be wrong, but I always credit him with it as going, if you can't describe what you do in repeatable process, then you don't know what you're doing.
I would agree.
So that was kind of the thing that drove me. So the more I kind of studied about his philosophy and, you know, the Toyota philosophy at Sony and all these other kind of companies that, you know, had grown into these conglomerates, it was all about quality over, you know, quality first. So it was like, how can you build a quality process? And how can you measure it? How can you manage it? How can you improve it? And that was kind of the whole driver of it, of everything. So the performance management hub kind of was the last piece to fall in place, but really the first piece you kind of start with now is going, right, what do we need to achieve? Let's work backwards. And let's just say your goal is $100,000 a month in sales. Let's work backwards from that, you know, to keep it simple maths. If it's $10,000 a sale, that means we need 10 sales. How many appointments do you need to get 10 sales?
And delineate it down the list here. Okay, this is so we can just kind of do some back of the napkin math here. Be like, well, I need 100 leads a month and I need to sell 10% of those. Or I need 500 leads because my conversion's X because it's a very high ticket item. Whatever it happens to be, you can figure it out.
And then you sit there and go, okay, well, the appointments, this is a qualified appointment. Someone that has, you know, the ability to make a decision. They have the capacity to spend $10,000. They have a compelling reason and a need why they need to spend $10,000. They're looking for a solution and you can help them. So you can create a criteria that you go, well, it's not just about getting 40 appointments. It's about getting 40 appointments of people that meet this criteria.
Right.
Because if they meet that criteria and you're not closing one out of four, well, that's a sales problem. Right. If you get 40 appointments and they don't meet that criteria, then that's a marketing problem. Quality control and part of this has been able to define the right problem. So you're fixing the right issue where too many people will go, and I've seen this 1,000 times, and I know you probably have too, is going, people get 6 months into a marketing program and go, well, this isn't working. I haven't got a sale yet. And you walk backwards and go, but we've got you 150 leads. Yeah, but none of them are bought. That's their problem solving of going, you know, you've got me leads, they haven't bought, therefore the process is broken.
Right. As opposed to, there's a chance that that they're unqualified leads, that could be a chance, or there's definitely a problem in your sales process and you don't know what you're doing when you got on the phone with them.
Yep. But there's definitely a problem with how you manage it, because you shouldn't get 6 months and 150 leads in before you realize it's a problem. It's going,
no, that should be 2 weeks.
It should be weeks of going, right, these leads aren't converting. Why? Is it a sales problem? And do we need to spend time on our training? Or do we need to improve our systems? Or do we need to improve our offer? Or is it the marketing, you're getting the wrong people, setting it up in the wrong way? Like, if you've got the right performance management in case, you can ask the right questions, which lead you to the right answers. And that's probably at the core, the biggest value of what we now do when it comes to implementing and managing this process, is not give you the answers, but put you in the position where you're asking the right questions of the right people to get the information you need to make the right choice. Because, you know, as you said before, there's a level of expertise that I have in sales that I can pinpoint root cause problems in a heartbeat, but I need to be asked the right questions. And I've been able to instill that into some of our project leads and instill that to our clients, you know, the ability to be able to ask the right questions well that lead you to the changes you need to get it to work. But you've got to have the dashboards and the structure to.
Right. You need the software in the back to track these metrics. Absolutely. Now, you want to do something fun? Let's do a quick live workshop here. Let's pretend I'm a client and I'm selling a software for commercial construction managers where they're building big giant buildings, and the software I'm selling can cut their project manager's time in half through AI, let's just say. We're having fun with this. I'm just making this up on the fly. And I speak to you and like, hey, this is what we're going to be doing. We're going to be using LinkedIn as the source. Walk me through a little bit of how you would identify that client avatar and what kind of messaging that if someone, and I hope they hire your services to do this, but let's say that they just really want like a do-it-yourself option here. What kind of messaging would you say can get you those responses that ultimately lead to a potential qualified booking? So let's have some fun with this. I'm delivering a product of software as a service where I can drastically reduce times. Let's do it.
Yep. Okay. So if you can drastically reduce times, I would want to be starting of going, why is that important to construction managers? Because no one cares about what you do. They only care about what impacts. So if they save time, you know, why is that important to them? And, you know, there's got to be answers behind that around, okay, if they save time, they can handle more jobs. You know, if they save time, they can work less, they can stress less, they could be running their jobs at higher profitability, you know, and there's a multiple kind of reasons there. But we want to take it one step further and go, you know, if they don't start saving time, what is that going to affect? You know, so if they can't book into more jobs, what does that mean?
What are the consequences?
Keep working that. And, you know, Tony Robbins used to call it the Dickens bottle from a Christmas tale by Charles Dickens. You know, you want to take them into the, you know, meet them at the reality. This is what your life's like now, because most people have a problem, but they don't realize they have a problem. If you remember a Christmas tale, Ebenezer Scrooge had a problem.
That's right.
But he did realize he had a problem. And then he got met by this ghost and someone took him back into the Christmas past. Hey, this is why these problems happen. So going to the construction industry. So you're busy. That means your processes are inefficient. That means there's, you know, there's all these kind of reasons why that's there. You've got outdated software. You've got outdated systems. You're doing things manually. You know, that's what's going on. Then you want to move them into the future and go, well, hey, if you don't, you know, if this continues, this is what it's going to look like. You're going to be missing out on jobs. You're going to be, you know, you're going to get some competitor that's going to come out of nowhere with better tech, overtake you and take your market share, you know, and you're going to be project managers burnt out and worked out, you know, and ultimately you're not going to realize the success that you want if you continue down this path. And then you meet them back in the middle and go, well, here's a different scenario. Make some different choices now. Imagine if you had an extra 20 hours a week, what would you do? What would you do with that? Would you invest in, you know, doing more bids so you can get more work? Would you invest in a team? Would you invest in that? And how would that change the future?
Now, Matt, would this be in your marketing approach before you even get into the direct messaging where it's like, this is kind of like the funnel you would get them into? If you don't mind expanding on that.
Yeah, so this is the story that you'd want to kind of build out first. So you'd want to go into that, into a fair amount of kind of depth with that and look at that on your LinkedIn profile, on your website. You might create some articles, some videos, and some marketing assets to kind of show them, you know, show them that. But then when it comes to the direct messaging thing, we've got to kind of keep it simple. You've got 100 to 150 words at the most in a direct message, you know, to actually get a response. And the goal of the direct message is to get them to reply. So depending on kind of who you're exactly going after, and let's just assume that you're going after a project manager.
Decision maker, whoever happens to be, right?
Yeah, you know, and your message would end up coming down to something as simple as, hey, Steve, saw that you're a project manager at ABC company. Just curious, if I could help you save 20% on your costs and get in front of 30% more customers, would that be something you're interested in? And simple question, clear value proposition, building a little bit of credibility into what you do.
I want anyone who just listened to that to please stop the audio, rewind 20 seconds and listen to what Matt just sent again, because both of us, and Matt can agree to this, how many times do you get LinkedIn messages where all they do is hit you with all the features of their company and they're explaining what their feet, how cool they are, and like what software widget they have. And then instantly you delete that and put it in your spam folder. So I don't mean to interrupt, but that is golden. I mean golden, how simple that can be and how effective it is.
There's so many layers of depth here that we can't possibly cover off in this time, but you've got to have that background story to be able to hit that value prop so quickly. You've got to understand why these problems exist in their company, what they really want. You've got to meet them where they're at. there, and then you've got to simplify it down into something that's just designed to get them to say, I'm curious, tell me more.
And is your objective to go back and forth on Messenger, or like, when do you say, hey, let's here's my phone number, what's your phone number, let's have a call?
Different circumstances have different, you know, different people have different circumstances, have different processes. The goal is to build enough intrigue and enough credibility that someone is prepared to give you some of their time. You know, you've also got to put enough deposits in the value bank that they want to find more out about, and they start to build credibility. So the more you give, the more you receive, and the more you ask, the more they tell. So the mindset in that conversation framework is be asking more questions than what you're telling, and be offering to kind of give them a simple solution to part of their problem. And so that, when you take that as a kind of a mantra, you start to look now at, right, what is the lead magnets we can create that are going to kind of fit in with that conversation from there? Like, so how can you go and give people something? Like, I've got so many different training videos that, you know, little mini courses that I've created that if I'm talking to someone and they say, and I'll use that, hey, look, if we could, you know, if you could save 20% on your sort of bit time and improve your profitability by 30%, would that be of interest for you? Yes, it is. Okay, great. My next message would be, okay, great. I'm curious, what do you think's getting in the way of success? Is it inefficient process, outdated tech, just not enough time of the day? And then, you know, they'll respond back, oh, no, not enough time of the day. Okay, great. Here, look, tell you what, this quick mini course that I've put together, three key things you could immediately do to find 20% more time in your day. Simple, go watch it. Let me know how you think. And then that's taken from the message into a sales funnel now, where they go put their details in, and then you can track how much time they spend watching the videos and all that kind of stuff. So you get all that data. So then you can have an automated process of, hey, book an appointment. Here's a 30-minute consultation, and we guarantee you, you know, we guarantee to help you find 8 hours a week in 30 minutes or less. And then you can follow that up in LinkedIn Messenger on, hey, what did you think? Love to be able to expand on that and be able to connect the dots with you and go from that. So there's multi steps that go in that conversation from there. And it is a conversation. It's not a sales pitch.
Mm-hmm.
It's a conversation where you're creating the need, first getting them to realize that, hey, yes, I have a problem. Yes, I want to help solve that problem. And now you start presenting the information. And then once you start presenting the information, then you escalate it through from that. And this can happen in three messages. Like, it's not a lengthy, it doesn't need to be a lengthy process. It doesn't need to be multi-weeks, multi-months in advance. It can be, here, go check this mini course out. Their reply will be, oh, that's great. That's amazing. Oh, and by the way, if I could guarantee to find you 8 hours a week of extra productivity, would you give me 30 minutes of your time? You've just given. And now you've created the context of, this is why I want your time. You give me 30 minutes of time and I'm going to find you 8 hours, 8 hours a week. Now they go, okay, yeah, great. Awesome. Book it in. And now you've set that appointment up that it's not just an appointment that's here to get a pitch. They've got a problem they want to solve and they're looking for you to help solve the problem. So your positioning through that sales process is as that credible expert that can guide them through, which makes it so much easier to guide them through the process and convert them on the back end from there.
Yeah, it really is a game changer, because I know a lot of other entrepreneurs, they'll rush to do ads, whether that's Facebook, Instagram, Google ads, and they're just kind of burning money and throwing it, and maybe they're doing some A-B testing with some copywriting. Obviously, that does work, but I can't think of a more personal touch than directly messaging someone, and they're just communicating with another human. Hey, you know, let's see if, I don't know if you're aware of this problem. This is the problem that the way I see the world. If you agree, let's kind of move down to the next steps here. And it costs you almost, and you don't have to really spend money on Sales Navigator. You can literally just find people, if you want to do this yourself, match the clients you want, and just send them just simple notations. That's all it really takes. Obviously, it helps to have marketing. Obviously, it helps to have like a mini course, but you don't have to spend $10,000 to do it. You can build up to that and then have it as you go.
Well, look, I've done in the last probably 7 years, I've probably done about $8 million worth of revenue directly from LinkedIn and email outreach. I haven't spent a cent in paid ads in that time. I'm still waiting for that, for a paid ad campaign to be able to outperform what I can do from strategic sales enablement. That's just the reality. So many people want to take the easy path and not actually put the conversations, because look, I could pull up my LinkedIn feed right now and I could show you 9 messages that I got this morning, all of which are not interested. 2 of which are actually laughing at my approach and going, this is never going to work and all that kind of stuff. Like I could show you that. But then I'll show you the one lead that goes, oh, this is amazing. This is exactly what I want.
It's all it takes.
That's all it takes. So, you know, too many people want to take the easy path. That ends up being the hard path. Like, and it's something that someone said to me years ago, and I've lived with it, you can do it the easy, hard way or the hard, easy way. And so I've always chosen to do it the hard, easy way. And so by using strategic outreach, sales enablement, and doing this door knocking type of conversational approach, yes, it takes more work in the beginning, but it doesn't cost any money. And if you're in that point of how am I getting started, well, all you've got is time. So use that asset as much as you can. Have those conversations. Fail forward, because you're going to screw it up. You're going to do some messaging and people are not going to respond. You can't figure out why they didn't respond. Go back and try again. And then people are going to respond, but you can't convert them into appointments. Figure out. And as you kind of keep failing forward, you keep finding pieces of that puzzle. And this does, again, this doesn't need to be a multi-month process. You can do this in weeks.
How much revenue do you think that using this system that you've created, how much revenue do you think you've created on behalf of your clients?
Probably in the last year, $40 million.
Unbelievable. So when you had that moment sitting at the edge of the cliff there, thinking, how am I going to get through this, to where you are now, it's an astounding, well, it's an astounding journey of success and determination to kind of get you through the other side there. Are you now past the point of where you said you were doing 1.4, 1.5 million doing sales training? What would you say your gross top line revenue is now on a year-end basis typically?
Yeah, look, we're not there yet, but we're much more profitable. So,
that's
top line revenue.
Way more important than the revenue.
absolutely. So we've been able to find a lot more leverage in what we do. So we're actually far more profitable than what we were at 1.4, even though we're probably at about 70% of that this year. We'll do probably 850, 900 grand at the most, you know, from there. But we're actually making more net because we've got higher margins. We've been able to find the leverage.
I'll talk about failing forward. You've learned as you've gotten on how to fine tune the system.
Yeah. And part of that kind of linking the story back full circle, sitting here right now, I'm only in miles, a third of a mile away from where I was at those days sitting at the lookout, because 4 years after we lost everything, through circumstances well beyond my control, we're able to buy the property next to the lookout. So I actually had that same view that I look at every day. And I think I've boasted about, we've compared views, and I think I've boasted that mine's better than yours, but
It certainly is. I'm in Connecticut, man. Yeah. There's nothing really inspiring around me for the most part, unless you're here in October, and that's pretty.
So, you know, that's the part of the rewards that come from getting through the season. You know, we went through the struggle. I doubted myself, kept pushing through, kept figuring it out, got the rewards. The part that I've had to learn on top of all that, and really it's only been the last probably 12 months where I've really learned that, is actually mentally move on from that failure. Even though I'd actually gone and had so much success for me and my clients and built this, you know, rebuilt this great business that's having an impact, there's a long period of time that between my ears, I was still caught up in that failure. And it was myself that was holding us back. It's only really been probably in the last year that I've kind of got myself out of that way and allowed success to happen a lot more. And it's really been in that time where things are just accelerating at a rate of knots. This year, our revenue's up probably 35% from this time last year, but it's actually accelerating. So I would be very surprised if I don't double my revenue over the next 12 months.
It's fantastic, man.
And that's just getting out of the way. So that's probably the final piece of the puzzle from when it comes to kind of dealing with the seasons of failure and kind of going through that adversity and that struggle. And, you know, when you're starting at zero, trying to get to the first 10K is a struggle. But when you're at 10K, you know, a month, it really is only you that is stopping you from getting from 30 to 40 to 50 to 100K. And the sooner you can get out of that way, the faster you actually go beyond it. So
that's right.
That's the real lesson out of, you know, that I've learned out of all of this.
Matt, this has been a wealth of knowledge on a sales masterclass and a very inspiring journey. I always like to end the show with two more philosophical questions. And I'll start with one, and this is really going to pertain a lot to you because you have six children. When your children have reached the adult stage, which I know that two of them, I believe, have already. So let's start with the youngest here. What do you want them to be most proud of their dad for? Do you want them to be proud that he's a successful business owner? But I would love to hear what do you aspire them to think of you as?
That dad was there. I've built this business that, despite all of this and all that kind of stuff, I've built this business where I've been able to drop my kids off at school most days, be at every sporting event, every dancing event, every drama event. You know, my youngest is actually doing a talk as a grandparents' day at school tomorrow. None of the grandparents can come for various reasons. And he's actually getting up and talking. And I said, oh, I'll be there. And I was able to block my time off. So, you know, the thing that for me I'm most proud of out of all of this, and I know the older ones appreciate it, the younger ones will in time, is the fact that I've been there.
That's huge, man. And I can't stress that enough, that to become an entrepreneur, really, really hard work, but you are the master of your own destiny. So you can block off time if you want to go away for a week. There's no one, you don't have to ask permission for anyone. So that's key. So that leads me into, please.
You go.
So the last question I always like to ask here, let's rewind the clock. Let's go back to a younger Matt who is maybe in his early 20s. Knowing what you know now, what would you espouse and what advice would you give that younger man?
Probably two parts. First part would be accept that you don't know everything, and then find people that excel in your blind spots.
So it wasn't necessarily a belief. It was more of a, I suffered from that, but believe me, the same fallacy of thinking I'm smarter than everyone, I could do it myself type of thing. So it's, yeah, I'm glad to hear you say that. You would just, nope, I'm definitely not the smartest person in the room. I got to hire someone for the weakness.
Yep. And, you know, learning that, like, you know, success is only as strong as your weakest link. And, you know, had I had, say, financial, you know, say I had my CFO now or my, you know, financial planner, you know, had I had that conversation when I said, I'm about to shuttle my business down and go do this whole thing, that conversation would have been, hey, Matt, is that really what you want to do? How about we do it in a couple of stages? How about we get a kind of proof of concept first and just challenge my thinking a little bit? And it would have saved me a lot of pain. I would have been able to get where I want to go a lot faster. But I did have that conversation because I kind of just went like a charging ball, just went headfirst into the problem.
Well, also you had a validation from your first business, like, oh, I'm making, you know, I'm bringing in $1.4 million. Like, this is, of course I'm not going to fail. I already was successful.
And that was the kind of the fallacy that I had in my head of going, oh, this is going to be easy. I can just do it. You know, I can replicate the same success straight ahead. Like, it's just going to be straightforward. Had I had a conversation and had I sort of looked at my blind spot, which is financial management, I would have gone, well, if you want to do that, maybe you cut your spending down a little bit. Maybe you just kind of, you know, stop the frivolous spending. Maybe you kind of budget, you know, but maybe you got kind of get a runway. You know, there's that there, which, look, I wouldn't be who I am today had I not gone through what I've done. So I don't kind of regret it. But if I was to have my time again and, you know, with a wiser head and the grayer hairs that I've got now, it's certainly kind of understanding what I'm really good at, understanding what I'm not, and surrounding myself with people that excel in the areas that I struggle at and listen to their advice.
Very true, man. You are wise beyond your years, my friend. I really appreciate your time. This has been excellent. So, Matt, if someone's interested in, you know, learning more about your sales process, potentially hiring your company to grow their own business, and I can attest, again, personally, I've used Matt to resounding success. So I know I'm not just saying that because there's absolutely no referrals, there's no kickbacks here at all. I sincerely vouch for Matt and his entire team in the process they do. So Matt, where can potential clients find out more about you and just engage in conversations?
They can go to howtoscaleyoursales.com. And if you go there, there's actually a book you can download for free, which is called How to Scale Your Sales. So go there, download the book. It's packed with the exact process to build the strategy that's going to work for you to be able to create a performance management and be able to put yourself in the situation or ask the right questions that give you the answers of what it's really going to take for you to successfully kind of scale your sales.
Brilliant. Thank you so much, Matt. Sincerely, thank you so much for coming on the show. I'm looking forward to watching you, your success, your journey. This is going to be a fun process, man. So you're doing the right thing, and you're making a big impact on the back end. So keep it up, man.
Man, I appreciate it. Thanks, Steve.
Yeah, cheers, man.
Thank you for tuning into Service Business Success with Class. Are you craving more strategies to supercharge your business growth? You can connect with me at successwithclass.com or on my Instagram at Stevie Class. And remember, when you hit subscribe, it's a win-win. You'll get your hands on all the latest tips, and you'll be supporting the show too. Thanks again for joining. Until next time.